Capitol Report is a production of Senate Media Services.
This week, we're at the State Fair talking with members of the Senate and the House about the legislative process, the best way for citizens to engage with their elected officials, and lawmakers' favorite fair activities, plus a new memorial to be unveiled on the Capitol grounds. Stay tuned for this week's Capitol Report. Welcome to Capitol Report at the State Fair. I'm Shannon Lurkey. Once again, it's that time of year. Minnesota's great get-together is back and better than ever. This week, we stopped in the Education Building at the Senate and House booths to talk with lawmakers about the legislative process and their favorite things to do at the fair. You're here at the State Fair, which means that you're hearing not just from people in your own district, but from people all across the state of Minnesota. What do you most appreciate about talking with people at the State Fair?
Hearing about the stories and what's happening in areas that I haven't had exposure to. Finding out what the issues are, how things impact people in my district may be very different for somebody else in another part of the state. And be able to find out what is the best way to help solve the problems that we have. And I think that is what's the most important thing, is being able to hear from different points of view that I've not always been exposed to.
And all the personalities and all of the clothing and what they wear and what's on their shirts and what they stand for. It's a fun place. It's just a melting pot, if you will, of ideas and people, and it's Minnesota through and through.
That's actually why I volunteer to do this, because I want to be able to talk to people from all over the state and hear what is on their mind. I just talked to a woman who has some questions about something, and they just want to be heard, and they want to know that they're telling somebody that can do something about their concerns. And I appreciate that. And I just talked to some constituents of mine too. So it's always nice to get a variety and see some people that I know. And I've been doing this now for 6 years, and I'm starting to, the same people from around the state still come in and ask questions. So I'm getting to meet them as well.
Ideally, what is the citizen's role in the legislative process? And in your view, what is the best way for them to interact with their elected officials?
Well, ideally, you're going to have a legislature that is going to be responsive to citizens, legislators that will communicate on a regular basis with their constituents, have town hall meetings, have forums on various issues. It's all about communications and seeking input, and whether it's surveys, going out in neighborhood forums, knocking on doors, interactive things on social media, all of the above. But it's reaching out and letting people know that their voice matters.
Participation in government is so important, and I would just say I don't think it's frankly what it used to be. I think we're just like so polarized in some ways that I'm not sure that we're having the kind of good discussion that we ought to have on pertinent issues of our time.
When we don't receive input from people in our state, we're not always going to make the best decisions, because we're not getting everybody's valuable input. And that's the important thing, is reach out to your local representative and send an email or a letter or leave a phone call. We get a lot that comes in, but we have people help us get through that. Most of us get to read everything. We just can't always respond to the hundreds of emails that come in every day, but we do like to go through and skim through them and read the ones out there so we know what's going on.
When I hear those concerns from the members of my district, I'm representing them at the Capitol. So then I take that information and I help represent them the best that I can based on the issues that they think are important.
And what is the best way, in your view, for people to reach out to their lawmakers?
It depends. Email is probably the quickest and easiest way. We all get a ton of emails every day from constituents. But as you get to know people, they know my cell phone number, they text me, I see them at the grocery store, I'm out to dinner and they stop me. So wherever you see the representative or your senator, introduce yourself and get their cell phone number, give them your cell phone number. This is an electronic world. We're all connected pretty quickly and easily.
Visitors to the Senate and the House booth have the opportunity to take the State Fair opinion poll. These questions are derived from pending legislation, issues that are coming before lawmakers, pressing issues before the state. Do you look at the poll results, and does it impact your views on anything?
It does, but here's the thing, the important thing to remember is the questions that are on the survey are more of a concept. Once that concept gets into bill form, it might be a 600-page bill. So I might be in favor of something conceptually, and the citizens of Minnesota filling out the survey here at the fair might overwhelmingly be in favor of something, but when the actual bill comes together, some of the wording in the bill and some of the additions in the bill might make it so it's something that isn't quite as favorable. So that's the one thing to remember. But you know, you take different things and they appear in the surveys year after year after year, and you can see that the public is getting more and more and more in favor of something, and eventually then it becomes law. So it's a great way to get the pulse of the Minnesotans to see what's on their mind, what issues they would like to see passed, and then it's up to us to actually take that concept and put it into bill form in a manner that can get passed and signed by the governor.
Actually, there's a few of the items on this year's questionnaire that are amendments that I have attempted. That's just maybe coincidental that they're on there. But we take a look. It's a part of the mix. It's not a scientific poll, but nonetheless, it is input. And so I definitely look at that, and there's ideas that have been advocated here that have become law.
While it's not scientific, at least gives an idea, you know, what are people kind of thinking? The average fair goer that comes through here have a way of influencing a little bit, you know, oh, this is something I should continue to pay attention to and learn more about. And if it's a lot of people saying, oh, no, it's kind of like, well, maybe it's something that I need to learn more about so that we don't, what are the negatives on it and what's causing that issue?
If you could change one thing about the legislative process, what would it be?
Oh my, I would force us to work until we get our work done. This May 23rd or whatever this constitutional date is that we say, now we're done. If we're not done, we gotta get finished. And we don't do that right now. I would change that process. I think, you know, we're up there, we need to get our work done. We haven't this year, honestly. I feel badly about that. I hope that we still can. But getting rid of that date, coming up with some other date that tells, now you've done your work, now you can go home.
I would have a requirement that all bills get a hearing. And it may not be an hour hearing or 2 hours, but at least that all ideas can be presented in the committee process. And we have to respect the diversity of ideas. The issue is not whether we agree or disagree. I believe it's important to be respectful of various ideas. The bills and committee chairs should hold hearings if there's a request by the author to do that.
Too often in budget years, when we get down to the final days of session, when we have the deadline is looming, too few people are involved with making the decisions. And if you're not one of the leaders, you're on the outside waiting for them to come up with a deal and put the final legislation together. And then by the time it comes to us, it's take it or leave it. We don't really have input on that, and that's just flat wrong. This needs to be done with all 201 legislators need to have more of a say in those budget bills as we get close to the deadlines every year.
The one thing I would like to change, and this is going to be very weird, is actually if we had more bodies to get things done. And the example I'll give is I've worked a lot on the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill, and that is so large that you need extra bodies to try to be able to talk through all the issues. And I've seen many times that in the House, we've got a lot of people there. We can throw more people on trying to get bills figured out so that we don't have these huge bills. We could break them down smaller. But because the Senate is limited to only 67, they don't have as many people that can serve on the same thing. So while we could have a bunch of committees, there just isn't the manpower there. And that's part of the reason why we can't get everything as done as we'd like to, because we just don't have the manpower to be able to do the negotiation in a way that gets the best results for people in Minnesota.
And to end on a fun note, what is your favorite thing to see or do at the fair? And more importantly, what is your favorite thing to eat?
I'll start with my favorite food. That's going to the dairy building and getting one of the sundaes over there. That is the best sundae ice cream in the whole wide world that I've ever had. And I will always, every fair visit I have, I always go there. The next place I like to go is over to the Eco Building over here. I love going through and seeing all the different things that are out there, from what's happening with water, with what's happening with our soils, what can we do for recycling, all those type of things to help make sure that we've got a clean environment going forward.
You know, it's always been Prono Pup, and I still like the Prono Pup, but just up the road, I think it is, there's a place where you can get a gizmo sandwich. It's an Italian beef. It's really good. I would recommend people try that as well. And the favorite thing to do, well, this year my grandkids are going to be coming to the fair. They're 2.5 now, so they'll be able to have the Prono Pups and stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to spending some time out here with them.
These great big corn dogs are, you know, actually that, and then I have to go to the corn on the cob too thing. That's good. So I probably got a twofer there, the corn dogs and the cob of corn. And then what I like to do, and I was just doing it, is sitting out there on the bench and watching the people walk by. And they're all ages, they're all sizes, they're all shapes, they're all different colors on their shirts. The clothing's different. It's fascinating. It just is, and it's all free.
There are so many things, like which of my five kids is my favorite or grandkids, but I love going to all of the exhibits. The education building. I love going to the animal exhibits, the births that they have, you know, going on, looking at all the ribbon winners and the 4-H club, and, you know, seeing some of your constituents that have become, ribbon winners as well. And, the people watching is outstanding, reminiscing with people that you may not have seen for some time. I just love the whole ambiance of it, and I've been going here all my life, and there's just it just keeps getting better and better.
Revitalization of the Promise of Youth sculpture includes combining that controversial work of art with the Minnesota Medal of Honor recipient's memorial. The project is almost complete, and here's a look at how we got there. The forlorn statue in an empty pool outside the Veterans Service Building at the State Capitol will soon be repurposed into a dual role, linking an artist's vision of the hopefulness of youth with Minnesota's courageous Medal of Honor recipients. In the fall of 2016, the descendants of the 72 Medal of Honor recipients with ties to Minnesota were recognized at a groundbreaking ceremony next to the sculpture. That year, the legislature approved a plan to incorporate the Promise of Youth sculpture with Medal of Honor symbolism to create a new Minnesota Medal of Honor memorial on the state capitol grounds. The updated memorial is another element realizing Capitol architect Cass Gilbert's desire for a tribute to veterans at the south end of the Capitol Mall.
What I liked best about the design that was selected, it connects the dots. The Capitol complex has a number of memorials, the World War II, the Vietnam, the Korean. We have now the family tribute that's wrapping its arms, and this was the one that wasn't a standalone, but a unifying memorial that just fits in. And it's to me, it's almost like a capstone. So that's what I said, this clicked.
The reimagining of the statue, fountain, and reflecting pool is an important step for a work of art that has been misunderstood, bereft, in the shadow of the Veterans Service Building for many years. The statue was commissioned in 1952 as an artistic component of the Veterans Service Building. The architect, Brooks Cavan, planned for a large pool with a fountain in the middle as part of the design, combining functionalism and beauty. Cavan hired sculptor Alonzo Hauser to create a centerpiece for the reflecting pool. Hauser designed the Promise of Youth, a figure of a young female encompassed by a bronze flower with mechanical petals that open and close with the sun. Historian Martin Zanger describes Hauser's design concept.
He said, "We've always had wars forced upon us, and what we're fighting for is peace and stability. and the future for our youth. And so she's reaching out of this lotus blossom that opens. He has her reaching toward this mural, which was going to depict all the things that the youth of America were dreaming about. The prospect, their future prospects in a peaceful world.
Controversy arose shortly after Hauser finished the sculpture, when some members of the Veterans Service Building Committee objected to the figure.
As one of the more militaristic people on the commission said, we had expected to see a guy throwing a hand grenade, not this naked woman. And they pretended to be upset at her nudity, even though there were nude females in art all around the Capitol and paintings and things.
The figure remained unseen in the artist's studio until an expose in 1957 by the student-run newspaper, the Minnesota Daily, garnered community support for the artist's vision. Once installed, problems plagued the fountain, ranging from mechanical issues with the operation of the pedals, leaks in the reflecting pool, and budgetary concerns, to vandalism and litter from kids hanging out around the reflecting pool. Since 2000, the statue's pedals have remained in a fixed position and the reflecting pool mostly empty.
In late 90s, we had funding to fix the pool and to repatinate and fix the statue. So we opened it up more and anchored it so it'd be permanently positioned, because it's a hazard if kids climb on it or whatever. And then within a few years, I think they had over-engineered, but we had a leak somewhere, either in the transport of the water to the fountain or the returns, so they just abandoned the pool. So they use this site for a lot of the staging, for ceremonies and stuff like that, but they haven't had, they filled it with water occasionally for an event, but that's it.
And so a new chapter is about to begin for what historians consider Alonzo Hauser's most inspired work, The Promise of Youth.
The promise of youth is a very powerful phrase, very, very much so. And I think if you get into the weeds, you can do a lot of things, but I think it's almost a mission, a statement. All right, why do we go to war? Why do we, you know, it's for humanity. We like to believe that, but it's also the youth that have to pick up the pieces. We need these memorials because it's a key that opens up discussions. So to your readers out there, if they have a relative that's been in the service, put them in the car, take them over here on a sunny Sunday afternoon and just walk through it. Give them the golden opportunity to talk.
One of the features of the Minnesota State Capitol from our series, The People's House. Minnesota State Capitol has a lot for a visitor to take in, from the art, from the variety of stonework, from the grandeur of the spaces. But for those people that are really interested in details, there's some symbols that they could search for. Can you talk about the symbols in the Capitol?
Yeah, sure. Cass Gilbert, who was the architect of the Capitol, and also Elmer Garnsey was the chief decorator, put all kinds of Minnesota symbols throughout the decoration. And a lot of these places you have to look real close, because you might walk by them if you worked here for years, for instance. If you don't look at the details, sometimes you walk by all these symbols for many, many years. And so you'll see lady slippers and North Stars, and there are gophers, because we're the gopher state. And they're interspersed and interlaced in all the decoration throughout the state capitol.
There's some threads that tie the outside to the inside in terms of symbols, the letter M and some of the braids of agricultural products. Where are they outside and where are they inside?
On the outside, you'll see on the exterior, especially around the front entrance, you'll see lion's heads. And when you see a lion's head with its mouth open, it represents authority. And then you'll see above that, you'll see eagles around the dome. And those are represented, of course, eagles from the national government. So we're part of this United States. And then in between the eagles and those columns, you'll see beautiful carved stones of lady slippers. And so those are ringing the dome. So once again, as you're walking up those front steps, you get this idea of the sense of prosperity and progress of the state. You have that gold horses in the front that represents the prosperity and the progress. Plus you'll see wreaths and festoons of products, agricultural products that were an important part of recognizing Minnesota's economy and its wealth from 1900.
So if you were to come inside the Capitol and look for eagles, where might you find some eagles?
You'll find them everywhere. You can go to the Rathskeller, there are eagles down in the Rathskeller cafeteria. You can go to the ground floor, there are some in the decorations of the pedestals. You'll see them in the first and second floor. You'll see them in just about every chamber. There's a representation of an eagle. Once again, establishing the importance of that federal government and the importance of being part of the United States.
As you approach the front of the Capitol, there's a letter M on either side. M plays a big part in this Capitol.
Yeah, M's are, of course, represent Minnesota. So as that visitor, you want to see that this is Minnesota's state capital. So you'll see letter M's not only in the front of the building, and you'll see them in the railings, in a cipher, they call it. You'll see letter M's even in the points of the star, the North Star, in the rotunda. And you'll see M's all throughout the decorations in the ceilings, the stencil work, and so forth in the House chamber. Once again, what Cass Gilbert and Elmer Guernsey are establishing is this is Minnesota's state capital. So you always want to remind people Minnesota has all these things that you can learn about or be a part or have that culture and that industry and that agriculture to understand us as a state in 1900.
The lady slipper, which is Minnesota's state flower, can be found both outside and inside at the top of the columns. Where else can we find the lady slipper?
As you walk up those front steps, you'll see, you have to look closely because they're quite a distance above you, but in those capitals, the Corinthian capitals, right dead center is the lady slipper. And that's also found in the third floor when you look at the top of the capitals throughout the building. You'll see these lady slippers, and they're in the railing, where there's a third floor railing that you have to stand on the second floor to look up to see those lady slippers. They're in some of the stencil work and the decoration of the house. And so that's once again an important state flower from the 1900s that is still an important part of us recognizing, you know, I think we're the only state that has a pink and white showy lady slipper. So that's a unique decorative detail in the state capitol.
Minnesota is known as the Gopher State, and it's because of a railroad scandal that happened in the 1850s. Tell us the story of how Minnesota became to be known the Gopher State.
Yeah, that was one of the first big political controversies or scandals in the state's history. And in fact, that all was taking place even before we became a state. Minnesota was given railroad grants from the U.S. government, and they added that grant legislation as a rider to a gopher and blackbird eradication bill. And so it was like eradicate gophers and blackbirds, and these land grants are given to the state of Minnesota to develop its industrial resources with railroads and so forth. But when we became a state, the Constitution said we could only borrow $250,000. And in order to build the railroads, the investors were saying we need more money. So they changed the Constitution just a few months after it was adopted to make that loan agreement to $5 million. And so what happened is they gave grants and money to all these different railroad agencies, and then there was a huge economic depression, sucked out all the investments out of Minnesota. And so for that $5 million, there wasn't 1 mile of railroad built. So that was a political scandal. So there was a St. Paul druggist or cartoonist who drew up a cartoon showing the railroad men dressed as gophers trying to influence the people, and they were pulling a car full of legislators to the end of a railroad track that went to the Slough of Despond, which is a Pilgrim's Progress reference. And so it's basically, you know, the railroad's being held up by the backs of legislators who were bribed. So the heaviness of the gold sacks are pulling them down, and the railroad's built on top of them. So that cartoon was pretty popular, and that's how we became known as the Gopher State.
And so where can those gophers be found in this building?
They're, once again, like stars, not as common, but you'll see them in the same railings. You'll see the lady slippers and the eagles. You'll see them carved in the house retiring room, which is not available to the public, unfortunately, but there's two little gophers sitting on their hind legs there, Those are the same things you'll see in the railings. They're also found in the gates. Those were added in the 1970s outside the chambers. And so you'll see them on their hind legs at the top of the gates. And so that's kind of a fun way of bringing in, you know, what Minnesota was recognized for even in 1900 was the Gopher State and the North Star State.
Well, let's talk about the North Star, because at the very top of the dome, it's adorned with zodiac symbols. Do those carry any special significance?
Yeah, they're representing more of the stars, the constellations. So the idea that Gilbert was trying to create was, as you're standing in the first floor of the rotunda, where there's a large North Star emblazoned in marble, but also in brass and glass, if you look up, you'll see, you know, these signs of the zodiac, which would be the stars above. And then some people say that large chandelier could be seen as a North Star as well, because that's a guiding light. And that was the idea that Henry Sibley wanted when he came up with that model for the brand new state of Minnesota in 1858, is we're the northernmost state at that time, and plus a North Star is a light that people can follow. And so the idea is follow our lead as a new state.
So there's a lot of detail to be discovered in the Capitol. How much of this is pointed out in a tour?
Yeah, a lot of it is something that is first and foremost as people walk through the spaces, and the tour guides are very good at pointing out some of those little clever details. Depending on the type of group, on the type of stories that guide might be talking about, because we don't really have a scripted tour. Each guide will have some different things and nuances they'll put into their tours to make it unique and individual. But yeah, you'll see obviously that North Star's in the rotunda. You might point out the gophers in the railings and the lady slippers. And you'll see all kinds of the agricultural products just as you walk through the building. And so the spaces the tour groups go to pretty much hit all these areas where you can, as that viewer, kind of ingest all that agricultural products that you see as a visual reminder throughout the building.
Was it common practice when this Capitol was being designed and built to have this level of detail found throughout a building like this?
Yeah, I think in this time period, what you're creating is this Italian Renaissance style building. And so you're bringing some of those decorative elements and details into the building. So the arabesques, which would be on the first floor stencils, are very kind of flowers and products of the state. And if you went to Italy, it might be a different type of decor there, because they're, you know, promoting what they have to offer, whereas Cass Gilbert and Elmer Garnsey made the decorations here very Minnesota focused. So you're going to see corn more than you would, say, apples or grapes in some other, you know, location in other parts of the United States or Europe. And so that's what makes the building really neat to look at, is it's a Italian Renaissance inspired building, but it has to represent Minnesota's values and its history and its economy as at the same time.
Again next week as we delve into more topics affecting Minnesotans. I'm Shannon Lurkey, and on behalf of all of us at Senate Media Services, thanks for watching.